A leather-bound book sits on a Buenos Aires cafe table between two friends saying goodbye. One walks away carrying more than memories. She carries stories that will cross oceans, change lives, and eventually reach millions in 17 languages. This is how healing begins, not with prescriptions or diagnoses, but with a simple tale about an elephant and a steak. Jorge Bucay, a Gestalt psychotherapist, discovered something psychiatry often overlooks, that our deepest truths bypass intellectual defenses when wrapped in narrative. His approach feels radical precisely because it's ancient. Long before therapy couches and clinical terminology, humans healed through stories around fires, passing wisdom through parables that lodged in the heart rather than the head. What makes these tales so potent isn't their complexity, but their simplicity. They slip past our resistance, speaking to parts of ourselves we've forgotten how to hear. Picture a massive elephant tethered to a stake barely thicker than your thumb. It could uproot that stake with a single tug, yet it stands docile, believing itself trapped. Chained as a baby when escape was genuinely impossible, it stopped trying after countless failed attempts. It carries that ancient defeat into adulthood, never testing whether the chains still hold. We live like that elephant more than we'd care to admit. At 7, classmates laughed at your book report. Now, at 37, you can't speak publicly. At 12, a math teacher called you slow. Today, you avoid anything involving numbers. These limitations feel like facts, solid as bone. They're actually ghosts, memories of someone who no longer exists. We build entire identities around supposed limitations. I'm not creative. I'm terrible with people. I could never do that. Testing these beliefs requires something uncomfortable, the willingness to fail again. Maybe you still can't give that speech, but maybe the chains snap like dried twigs the moment you pull. Two frogs fall into a vat of cream, facing certain death. The first accepts his fate and drowns quickly. The second refuses to die, kicking and thrashing for hours with no plan beyond not yet, not yet, not yet. His persistence transforms the cream into butter, and he hops away. Bouquet pairs this with a darker tale, a woodcutter whose cold hands convince him he's dead. Dead men don't chop wood, so he lies down. Wolves devour his provisions, then his mule, then, finally, him. Good thing I'm dead, he thinks throughout, or I'd have stopped them. Which story are you living? Are you kicking in the cream, transforming circumstances through persistent action? Or have you decided you're already dead, watching passively as life devours what matters most? A servant discovers 99 gold coins, a fortune, but feels only anguish. He's one coin short of 100, and that missing piece becomes an obsession. He works himself sick, alienates his family, and loses everything pursuing completion. This parable exposes modern existence. The servant possessed wealth beyond his dreams, but experienced only poverty because of a single missing piece. Bucay reveals consumer society's trap. How happy I would be if I had what I don't have. The genius is that what I don't have perpetually refills. Get the promotion, suddenly you need the corner office. Buy the house, now you need renovations. The 100th coin is always one purchase away. Contrast this with Diogenes. When offered coins, he asked if the wealthy man wanted more money himself. Told yes, Diogenes suggested he keep it. He needed it more. Diogenes found freedom not through accumulation, but through recognizing sufficiency. The servant's tragedy isn't lacking one coin. It's redefining his 99 as insufficient. We have health, but fixate on 10 pounds. We have relationships, but obsess over the friend who doesn't call back. Our 99 coins sit uncounted while we rage about the 100th. When Bukai's patient complained about being lied to, the therapist offered an unsettling refrain. People don't lie to you specifically, they just lie, primarily to themselves. He described a psychiatric patient convinced he was Napoleon who passed a lie detector test when asked about his identity. The man wasn't lying, he genuinely believed his delusion. This distinction between sincerity and accuracy reveals an uncomfortable truth. Many of us tell truths we believe that don't correspond to reality. In The Blind Man's Wife, a woman objects to surgery that could restore her husband's sight, fearing being seen as she truly is. In The Truth Shop, a man seeking the whole truth learns the price. He'll never again be at peace. He leaves, realizing he still needs some comforting illusions. We maintain self-protective fictions that preserve hope or relationships that might collapse under complete transparency. Bukai distinguishes between sincerity, telling truth as we understand it, and frankness, complete openness. Authentic relationships don't require total transparency, but rather a commitment to avoiding deliberate deception. We believe lies because they promise what we want to hear, that we're special, that our problems aren't our fault, that success will come without difficult change. Everything contains its opposite. Light exists only against darkness. Courage emerges from fear. Goodness defines itself against evil. Bukai frames this as the world being one enormous yin and yang, two parts forming an indivisible whole that can be distinguished but cannot exist independently. Psychological health comes from integrating unwanted aspects into complete self-awareness rather than eradicating them. Our shadows aren't enemies, but disowned parts seeking recognition. Bukai illustrates this through souls at heaven's gates. Saint Peter finds only one pure soul who never sinned. When God forgives all the sinners, this lone soul protests, revealing his hidden sin of resentment and self-righteousness. Even virtue becomes vice when taken to extremes. In The Hen and the Baby Ducks, a hen hatches duck eggs and panics when the ducklings instinctively swim. One duckling responds, "Don't blame us for your shortcomings." Neither was wrong. They simply saw reality from different positions. The hen rightly fears water, the ducklings rightly swim. Problems emerge when either side insists their reality must be universal. A father tells his son he has wings but needs courage to use them. Following cautious advice, the son jumps from a tree and crashes. His father explains wings need altitude like parachutes. To fly, you must be willing to take risks. If you're not prepared, resign yourself to walking. This parable reveals meaningful growth rarely happens comfortably. Like wings requiring altitude, our greatest capacities emerge beyond familiar territory. In Who Are You?, Sinclair wakes to find no one recognizes him. Initially distraught, he realizes this isolation forces him to confront his true self. His existence isn't dependent on others' approval. Lentils explores this further. When told he wouldn't eat lentils if he flattered the emperor, Diogenes responded, "The minister wouldn't flatter the emperor if he learned to eat lentils," choosing self-respect over approval. In The King in Search of Praise, facing execution unless they worship the king's statue, only the beggar refuses. His integrity moves the king to abandon tyranny. These stories challenge us to examine where we compromise authenticity for safety. Living courageously means acting in alignment with our deepest values, despite our fears, prioritizing authentic expression over external rewards. An old man named Eliyahu plants date palms, knowing he won't live to see them bear fruit 50 years later. When questioned, he explains, "I've eaten dates sown by someone who had no hope of eating them himself. Today, I plant so others can eat tomorrow." This captures intergenerational contribution. We benefit from others' efforts and must create value for those who follow. The merchant, moved by this wisdom, rewards Eliyahu with coins. The old man notes he's reaped a reward before finishing his planting. Given a second bag for this insight, Eliyahu observes he's now reaped twice without intending to. The merchant hastily departs, fearing his fortune might be insufficient for further lessons. This humorous conclusion reveals an important truth. While our primary motivation should transcend personal gain, meaningful work often brings unexpected rewards. By focusing on creating value rather than extracting it, we sometimes receive more than those pursuing direct self-interest. Bukai extends this with the story of the hidden diamond, a family tradition of piling yellow stones in their garden. When a boy questions why only yellow stones bring luck, his father reveals a valuable diamond lies beneath. Eventually, the secret is lost and no one remembers the hidden jewel. This serves as meta-commentary on Bukai's approach. The stories are markers pointing to deeper treasures readers must discover themselves. What are you planting that will bear fruit after you're gone? Are you maintaining empty traditions or connecting with deeper meaning? Your actions will outlive you. The question is whether you're planting with intention or merely scattering stones across barren ground.